From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 485, large-scale Windows 10 deployments with guest Stephen Rose. Recorded Monday, July 18th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I am on an interesting temporary rig today because my normal recording machine decided that its temporary location after the basement flood wasn't good enough anymore, and now it won't play. So we'll see how this actually goes, but the good news is I have a Ringer speaker because Stephen Rose is back, and these days he's the Senior Product Marketing Manager for Windows and Devices. Before joining Microsoft, he spent 10 years as an IT consultant working with Fortune 500 companies as well as a speaker at IT and developer conferences around the world. He used to be an MCSE, MCT, as well as an MVP, but I don't think you're any of those things anymore.
Not anymore.
No, maybe you'll come back to the world someday. Actually, I can't imagine. You seem pretty happy there.
It's coming up on 8 years, so it's been a pretty good gig. Some point I will.
Yeah.
And I do miss it. I love hearing what all the MVPs are up to and all the MCTs and the new MCSE for cloud.
Yeah.
Which is no longer what it used to mean. So.
Yeah, no, that's a different thing too. All of this stuff's evolved. Well, you get to go to the MVP summit. You just go as a Microsoft person, right?
I do. I get to sit and see all my friends and all the RDs and you and Michelle and everybody else.
That's right.
It's always great to see everybody.
I think we yell at you more now.
Yeah.
That's about it. So, and another promotion, handling the world of Windows for all over the marketplace now.
Yeah, I'm doing financial services, hospitality, retail, health and life science. I work with our largest customers in the United States to help them get deployed and then tell that story.
And how's the Win 10 deployments going? Because the numbers seem big. Aren't they headed for a billion installs?
It's our goal.
Yeah.
Right now, last time I checked, and it was about 90 days ago, we were about 350 million.
Okay.
I think, obviously, with the anniversary update coming out in the next few weeks, we'll release a newer number, and we're close to 40 million enterprise seats installed. But that number's picking up quickly because a lot of folks really sort of waited till the last update that we had and sort of started testing it. And with this August 12th update, Redstone 1 or Anniversary Edition, as it's going to be known as, that's sort of the kickoff for a lot of folks. So we have a lot of seats that are kicking in.
And the machine I'm actually recording on is my secondary laptop that is on the slow ring, the slow insider ring. I think I have the Redstone bits now.
How do you feel about it?
You know what? It just works.
Good.
That's my reaction is I did another refresh recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was all of last night, and now the code name numbers have disappeared, which usually is a sign of this is it.
How do you like the new start menu that they've sort of collapsed and condensed?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is based on the feedback that folks have been giving. Do you feel it's a little easier to move around in now?
I'm so into shortcuts for everything now that I just don't even, I don't even see menus. They don't, you know, it's, I hit Windows key and type in the shorthand name for everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way I learned to work.
I'm the same way. It's WinWord and PowerPNT and, you know, Notepad and all the rest.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I have done is I've put my taskbar on the left because I have multiple screens plugged in. And so the horizontal real estate is expensive. I'll sell you some vertical for a taskbar.
Yeah. And what about Edge? Have you played with any of the new extensions yet?
No, haven't taken the cycles on that. And I'm a LastPass guy. So, you know, for me, number one is if I don't have my password manager, I can't function. So
okay.
I've been waiting to be able to put LastPass into Edge before we can really go anywhere.
Okay.
I'm one of those, I don't think of myself as particularly paranoid, but yes, every single password on every single website is different.
Yes.
And all the important ones change themselves automatically every 30 days.
Mm, I think that's smart.
Well, you know, it takes time to learn how to do it, but it's just one less thing I need to think about. Each time another site gets breached, and I just got caught in another breach, I'm like, that password's used nowhere else.
Right.
So, you know, it's fine.
Well, you know, I keep telling you that if you're going to be part of, you know, the whole Ashley Madison thing, you really should, you know.
I don't know. I think I'd sign up a separate email address, really. Although, why would you? I don't understand why they're still in business.
Well, let me tell you this. This is interesting, is every year they come out with that list of the worst passwords, and it's always like 1, 2, 3, 4 password.
Yeah.
When I took a look at what the top 20 Ashley Madison passwords, they were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 football, baseball, password. I'm thinking if you're going to be infidelitous to your spouse, you probably should pick a good password to hide it from.
Yeah, just be a little more clever.
Not password 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, not too sharp.
No.
You know, in this audience, you and I, we are not regular people, right? Hopefully we are a little more diligent with our passwords in one form or the other. But I mean, the reality is today, breaches are constant.
Yeah.
The RockYou list represents the 14 million most commonly used passwords. So even if you did have a great password, if it's in that list, it's being tested against every salting and encryption technique out there. There's just no substitute for routine changing of passwords. And that means you need a tool that's actually keeping track of your passwords for you.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of biometrics, and I'm actually playing with something new. There's a really interesting company out called NEMI, N-Y-M-I, and they have done a biometric band that works off of your unique electromagnetic profile on your body.
Well, that's interesting.
So you put it on your wrist, and then when you touch your finger to the buckle type device, it basically you complete the circuit. It then takes the pattern that your body creates, which is as unique as your DNA. And then that can be used for login to devices that support the low power Bluetooth on your local device. And we're now testing it with everything from car rental companies to replace your car keys. When you walk up, car automatically unlocks. Use it to check out of the lot. You use it instead of car keys to hotels, giving them to all of the staff and to customers where they can use that to get into the room, and even for staff to choose which rooms they can go in, which ones they can't.
Interesting.
So some really interesting uses for it.
Do you see Microsoft replacing this from their smart cards? Because you guys went all in on the smart card back in the day.
I think in time. I think the addition of wearables as a biometric login, and we showed this off at one of the conferences this year. It's fully supported in anniversary edition. It becomes critical, but we still like the local PIN, because the bottom line is you have to have access to the device as well as have the biometrics in order to log in. And that's really been the key thing. Our goal is to make sure that you never send your username and password
Sure.
over the internet again.
Yeah. Well, and I also just like this idea of something you have and something you know.
Yes.
You know, those combinations still seem to be the most functional for all of these scenarios and manageable that way. But this is interesting. It's, you know, this, I thought this was what NFC was supposed to be on our smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
It just never seemed to work.
Yeah, I have all the phones, an iOS and an Android and all the rest, and I've been playing with the NFC login, and it's just too cumbersome. I think people just want to sit down, and again, it's that if it's good, it should just work.
Yeah.
And that's where the facial recognition is great. There's a great company called BioKey that does fingerprint readers for $40 that work in any hardware running Windows 10, so the quick tap or swipe is great. But I love the idea of the band where as soon as you get close to the device, it logs you in. And it's so much more accurate than NFC. And it's also at a much higher level of encryption. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think it's still going to take a few more years before we see super wide acceptance. But what we're seeing and what's interesting is within like the retail is a manager will give an employee their card and saying, here, go ahead and do the discount or do that product for free. Now they have to walk up and just tap their finger.
Right.
Or swipe. Same with shared logins at hospitals, which creates a lot of risk. So I think, you know, what we're seeing is IT pros are saying, we want to get away from this shared credential. We want to get away from this somebody handing off a card or telling them what their password is and requiring this physical interaction between the user and the device. So we're seeing some interesting stuff with biometrics there.
So answer me this question then, changing gears a little bit here, yeah. Stephen. Why aren't we calling this SP1, this Redstone update?
I think service packs, you know, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that, have a definite sort of image in people's minds that, oh, it's all the bug fixes and it's all the patches
right.
all brought out, where we've been doing that in Windows 10 from day one.
Right.
We've kind of gotten rid of patch Tuesdays. And as soon as patches were ready to come out, if they were low level, we'd sort of stack them all up at once. If they were higher level, do that. We're now also updating phone for people that are still using the Windows phone, for people that are using Windows Mobile. We now control that. So it's more of a cumulative thing rather than being cumulative. We're doing it as we move along. Hmm. We're also adding new feature functionality. One of the great things is with Redstone, with Anniversary Edition, users are now going to have 12 to 18 months in between the larger updates. So we won't see a new large update for a while, but we will every, you know, few months make sure that we have that cumulative update available for people looking to catch up on images and do that rather than wait till these big points in time. It also mentally for a lot of IT pros was the operating system is not stable until SP1.
Right.
But we didn't give people a year, you know, 8 months to a year playing with a beta before the actual operating system came back. So we didn't get all that telemetry. So we sort of moved SP1 to launch. And it sort of changed that because of that interaction with customers and that early availability.
Well, we did have that the July release. For me, is that when I put my IT hat on, didn't feel like a release I wanted in my business. The October updates, it's sort of, okay, this is the version I should be looking at for my company.
Right.
And now they still get the feeling like Redstone seems to have brought all the bits together where you're like, this is a really slick pro version of Win 10.
Mm-hmm.
Although it does seem like some of the Redstone updates are very consumer centric.
They are, absolutely. I mean, things like Windows Ink is there, but now adding features like UEV and AppV that were MDOP features.
Yep.
The new AutoVPN, which is really, you know, we're seeing direct access starting to get depreciated as VPN now says it's a seamless and secure connection that's established when you open a website that needs a VPN connection and there's no action required to use this.
Yeah, direct access, we did a bunch of shows on it and I played with it a bit, but it was simply not for the faint of heart. On the IT side, it's awesome for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Like your field users, they love, love, love it.
Yeah.
But getting it right and running well inside of your network, whatever those configurations, like it was not a small thing to get those things right. Hal, if I remember correctly, the first version required two contiguous routable addresses. Like it was not a small commit.
And they had to be IPv6 only.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the wizard, and when we first came out with it in the Windows 7 days, was horrible. With Windows 8 and when we went to the next version of Server, it got a whole lot better with Server 2012, where we said, hey, we'll support IPv4. It became more like an 8-step wizard.
Mm-hmm.
It got a whole lot better. But I agree. Since people skipped Windows 8, they really didn't catch up with it. So I think we did that next logical step and AutoVPN, which fits nicely in with a lot of the infrastructure that people have already.
Right.
I think is going to become what those of us who have implemented direct access and the goodness that we've seen, they'll do it, but it will be a lot easier for them.
And so does AutoVPN not insist on the Microsoft backend piece for this? Does it have more flexibility?
It has more flexibility. I don't have a final list, but I know we have several Cisco clients and other ones that it works with. So there's a lot more flexibility.
Well, and it's sort of speak to the real problems with VPN is not that it needed to exist or anything like that. It's the client.
Yeah.
The fact that in the middle of whatever the heck you're doing, your computer decides it's more important to tell you that the VPN connection is down.
Yeah.
That is always been a mistake. It was the key thing that what direct access had right.
Mm-hmm.
If I see we have a working network connection, I'm going to just little hint in the sys tray that says we're on, we're off. Like, you know, you get it just works or it doesn't work. There's no surprises and there's certainly no interruptions.
Well, I think also for how IT pros are now looking at structuring software, where a salesperson used to have an ACT or Goldmine or CRM database on their local machine. You don't want that because the day that they leave the company, you're screwed because they're taking the whole sales pipeline with them.
Right.
By moving that to the cloud now or even remotely to on-site servers, that's great. But they would go ahead and launch the software. Forget it's not local. Break the VPN connection. Have to go through a token. Wait the 60 seconds. It was such a pain that they started to do things locally. Direct access and auto VPN brings is it's that whole, I don't care how it works. I just want it to work invisible to the end user. Salespeople, not the most technical, They double click their sales management tool. There they are connected. They don't realize that they're connected to the cloud. They think they're doing things locally and it just works.
Right.
Add EVP to that. You now have a really great way of managing end users and securing the data. So the day that salesperson leaves, they're not taking the sales pipeline nor any of the confidential data with them. And that's a big shift, and that's changing how IT is looking at managing remote users.
Yeah, and so acronym police, EDP being Enterprise Data Protection?
Sorry, EDP being Enterprise Data Protection, which we're actually now referring to as Windows Information Protection, WIP.
There you go.
Whip it good. And what that does is it allows you to encrypt the document as it's created based on either a user, a group, everybody in your org, or by keywords. And then when that user leaves, you can remove access. You tell it how often to call home. They go to launch it no matter where they've stored it. It calls home and says, hi, you don't have access to this. And that's it.
Yeah.
Anything that they created, they no longer have access to without interrupting all the people who still have access to that document.
And I did a show a few weeks back with Simon May where we were talking about mobile application management. I think this is part of that same thing, really kind of through Intune, where it's, you know, Office and a bunch of other programs on all of the devices can have these rules put in place where they call home. And you can say that, you know, I just love the idea that, oh, you're using your phone or you're using your laptop and you've got Word on it. Well, I can tell your Word, this is a document they only get when they're working for the company. It dies automatically.
Right.
And you don't destroy their whole machine. You just take out the individual enterprise related things.
Yep. It also means that if they save it into, you know, Google Drive or to a thumb drive or wherever they put it, it doesn't matter. And that's the problem, is storage has gotten cheap and cloud storage is ubiquitous. It's very easy for people to dump things in a lot of places before they quietly walk out the door.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely true. Stephen, give me 1 second to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard. In the aftermath of data breaches in the public, we are often told we couldn't have seen it coming. But in a lot of cases, that's just not true. Over 80% of breaches have their roots in misconfiguration, whether it be a firewall rule, server setting, open port, or third-party service. UpGuard is the premier service of record for IT configurations, no matter the platform, pinpointing anomalies and surfacing unauthorized changes in critical systems around the world. See how it works and get a live customized demo at upguard.com/runasradio. All right. I don't want to dive too far into enterprise data protection or whatever the new version of that is, like Windows protection, because it's not just for enterprises.
Right.
Everybody deserves these security features. In fact, that's an interesting talking point that has come up in the discuss forums of the RunAs site lately, is why would any security features available in Windows be restricted to any particular version of Windows?
I think that's a good point. And a lot of it has to do with the baseline of now UEFI and being able to support some of the features that are now built into Windows, which we couldn't do with the old BIOS configuration. Device Guard.
Right.
You know, the ability now to, because of the security infrastructure and the way that it's developed, to be able to say, this is what can run, this is what can't, new levels of encryption, and now MDM, something that was hard to do with Windows 7 machines, but much easier with Windows 8 and Windows 10 machines. Now to be able to say, hey, we're going to set up a rule in the newer version of Server, which doesn't support some of the older versions of Windows, and be able to say, hey, if these 10 apps are running, you're not allowed to run any of these personal apps because they could leak data or vice versa. So it's a combination of the MDM tools, AirWatch, MobileIron, Intune, System Center, newer rules for Server, plus the newer, more secure platforms. It's a combination of those, which is not always backwards compatible with some of the older versions of Windows.
Sure. Yeah.
Plus, starting next summer, you're only going to be able to get Windows 10 on new hardware. So we really want to optimize for that, because the chip manufacturers have said, we're no longer going to put Windows 7 because we want to get everybody to the same security point where we know everybody at least has the same baseline security, which allows the chip manufacturers to create a more secure platform the hardware manufacturers to be able to leverage that, and for us at Microsoft and Windows and our other products to better be able to leverage that new sort of triangle infrastructure.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, Win 7 is getting old. When does the end of support come?
Yeah, the mainstream end of support has already happened, and extended support ends in 2020.
Okay, so I mean, we have a few years, but it's not that many.
No.
If you're a big organization actually planning a move, you've really got to get moving on it.
Right. But the problem is it was designed, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Sure.
The world has changed and the types of attacks have become so complex that Windows 7 hardware and Windows 7 itself is very hard for it to combat that. At 229 days till the company knows if a device in general on average has been compromised in some way, shape or form, and with 1/3 of all devices currently having some form of malware on it and it laying dormant, these are the types of things that we want to reduce that, and only through a stronger, you know, boot process, more secure boot process, more secure operating system can we help those companies. The stats are absolutely mind-boggling when we take a look at what we're seeing now.
Yeah. It's no longer the days of college-led worms that were just harmless propagators. They're serious, professional, money-making cyber crime taking place on people's machines.
Yeah. And whole countries that are doing this. I mean, There are state-led terrorism attacks that are coming down onto local machines, whether it's to zombie them or set them up for DOS attacks or use them for mass computing. There's so many more reasons that it's become so much more sophisticated. And with that gap between boot and OS load, it provides that perfect area for injectable attacks. They've also learned that things like finding the kiosk, or everybody has that one machine that's running the old version of the OS because it runs some 20-year-old piece of software, which is critical to the business, but, you know, that still uses a modem to dial in for rebates or things along that line.
Yeah.
Getting to that machine, it still holds a DNS record.
Yep.
And that becomes the blueprint to your whole network.
Heck, it might still be joined to your domain, right? Like, that's the thing that's frightening, is you have this one old orphan machine, and it's literally like an infected child, you know, sitting in your network, spreading disease.
Yeah. I mean, let me ask you this question. You and I have had many conversations along these lines. What are the three biggest areas that frighten you when you're sitting down talking to a customer? What are the three red lights that you see? For me, it's always either the beige 486 that's still sitting underneath somebody's desk, which there's always one with a turbo button in the front. There's always one somewhere covered with dust, but it's super critical.
Yeah, it runs NT4 and SQL 5.2, and it runs every day.
Yeah, and it's running this rebate app. It's running this old homegrown piece of software by somebody who passed away 10, 15 years ago. But it's critical to their business, and they're afraid to look at it, touch it, move it.
Yeah, no, it's a time bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Or folks who have whole sales forces who they don't see those machines for years.
Right.
And that when those sales guys go down, they go, yeah, we'll just send you out a new laptop. So what do you see as that big area where most IT pros tend to either turn away and just sort of ignore it, or just don't really see the problem?
Well, you know, it is all of those older, that older infrastructure. It's a rack of servers that should have been replaced ages ago. There's never been budget for it. You know, they've peeled the most critical services out of it, but there's a bunch of stuff that's still there, just not willing to turn it off.
Right.
And there's an argument if they do turn it off, it will never turn on again.
Yeah.
Like, drives so fried that the moment they spin down, their bearings will seize.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, old hardware is easily the most terrifying aspect of most organizations. It's just stuff that's still around.
No, I agree. I mean, I did a project for P&G where we were spinning down old servers, bringing up new ones, and 1 in 4 just wouldn't come back up again because they had been running for 15, 20 years nonstop. So I agree. But that's where that conversation of, does it make sense to move it to the cloud, to virtualize it? All of these great technologies that are out there that allow.
Well, P2V is such a rush.
Yeah.
Right? To just, the server's still running, except the computer's now off. Like, once you've had that experience, you're permanently addicted.
Yeah.
But let me throw one other one in you that deeply worries me. Like, when you talk about an organization I'm going to have a problem with, it's security privilege based on political strength, not need.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and that comes in the form of a director of finance who's going to use an iPad with mission critical data, even though we can't administer it.
Right.
Or folks that have admin accounts that they use as their daily driver accounts.
Yeah.
Like that to me is the big attack vector today, right?
That always amazed me. That was the first thing when I would come in as a consultant. And I'm still amazed that most IT pros don't do it, where they say, look, here is your admin account. This is only used when you're going on a server, when you're doing this and that. It will be audited every time you log on. It's audited every time you log off. Everything you do, I'm going to get that daily. This is your daily account with elevated rates. And the problem is it just becomes laziness. It's, I don't want to sit there and have to log in and log out and go back and forth and do that. And I agree. After a while, you get such scope creep of people saying, oh, I need access to this. I need access to this. And instead of cleaning house and really taking that step back, and that's always been my mantra when folks were moving from XP to 7 and now from 7 to 10 is, you know what? Bring in a consultant.
Yep.
Who says this is a better way to do it and blame it on them. Say, hi, this is our hired gun. Management told me to bring this person in. They're bad. They're evil. They're mean. And they're going to take this away from you if you don't want to do that. But it's such a great time to clean house, to change processes, and to have people relook at things.
We had Mr. Schnover on a while back talking about just enough administration. And it, you know, this is the idea that each task basically has an account assigned to it. And yes, audit out the wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
And you only do these things on it, and we're going to look at everything you do. And then you have this one master account he called the breaking glass in case of account.
There you go.
I think of it from the developer perspective of like when you break the build, you know, flashing lights should turn on and so forth like that, because that's now the most important thing. It's like, if you feel you need to activate that account, alarm should go off.
Yes. A dive claxton would be great.
And it's not that we're saying you can't use it. It's that we're saying that the system has failed if you needed to. And now we have to actually improve the system so you don't need to again.
Yeah. Nobody looks at that with, I'm going to put on my special gloves now and log into this account as I move into this room filled with nuclear waste kind of mentality. and it should really be, I'm going to put on the zoot. I get 17 minutes when I'm in there, not a minute more. Then we're going to pull you out type of thing.
Right.
But that was, you know, in my days of security consulting, the first thing, which is we're going to get rid of these shared accounts. We're going to get rid of this single account. Everybody, you know, we're going to break this down. We're really going to do some auditing. And when you take a look at it, you're going to know what the hell are people doing in here? Why are they doing this? And start to lessen those permissions and start to curtail that back. But it is hard to tell a CIO or CEO.
Save me that you were web surfing on a super user account, right? Like we're in hell.
Yeah. And it's hard to tell your CIO, hi, I know you could do this on Friday, but you can't do this anymore from this device.
And that's a very, you know, I flatly admit, and this is a long many years ago, to giving a politically powerful person inside of an organization an account with the word admin in it that had no privileges at all. Just to see if he would ever actually use it. And he never used it. He never called me to say, this account doesn't work.
So the emperor had no clothes is what you're saying.
He, you know what? He wanted to have it. I think he logged in with it once. And once he knew it was there, he never used it again.
That's very smart. Yeah. I think that that's great advice for the folks listening in. I think things like that make great sense. And it is about having the position of power more than really needing it or utilizing it.
Exactly. You know, we are never going to be in charge as IT people. That's the reality. Nor do you want to be. It's not a fun job, really.
No.
But you all have a lot of influence. You have a tremendous amount of influence because everything that really happens in an organization flows through us in some way. So, you know, using that influence intelligently and actually keeping the organization safe in spite of itself, because you're always going to catch it. It doesn't matter that it was the CIO's fault. That was your job.
Right.
I don't know, it's a really interesting challenge, just this whole conversation about you're never going to do this from a position of strength per se. You have to be persuasive and, you know, maybe even a little sneaky while you try and make sure people do the right things.
You realize for those of you who are listening in and saying, I want to become an IT pro or I'm just starting, when you do your job right, nobody notices and no one says thank you.
Totally invisible.
When you're doing your job wrong, everybody notices and everybody is on you. It is truly a truly thankless job. And it's very hard not to get the God, you know, theory of I can rule your life and make things difficult and turn things on or off. Because as great as that sounds, it really doesn't help anybody or help the system. It's a rough job if that's what you like out of a role.
Yeah, if you want to go back and search ancient history on the internet, look for the logs of the bastard operator from hell. You know, that was the guy who, when somebody called in and said, "Hey, my mailbox is full. Can you make more room?" Just deleted all your email.
Right.
And then we're like, "Where'd all my email go?" You said you need more room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, but in the end, the challenge of this job is that we're not on the front line, right? We are support people, and it's other folks that actually make the money in the organization. We just make them more effective at that.
Right.
And as soon as we lose sight of that, we're in trouble.
But it is a great time as companies are looking now to move to, you know, the next version of Server, which we're releasing at Ignite, the next version of Windows. And I always say to people, it's like moving. There are two types of people. They pick up everything in house A and they move it to house B, whether that makes sense or not, or the mm-hmm. people who go through every single thing. And if you haven't used it in 10 years, if it still doesn't make sense,
you should probably let it go.
You can always recreate it. And I think that there is a certain sanity about using those moments in time. When you move to a new platform, when you finally get everybody off of the old shares and you actually move them to SharePoint, when you move people to Windows 10, when you put in, you know, this per app VPN, or you move to direct access, et cetera, or new version of Office to kind of change how things are done and say, hi, this is how it's going to work. And we'll have some classes and do some learning and get you to, because everybody will benefit.
Yeah.
And people will forget the old way of doing it quickly. And those who are stubborn, you're just going to have to give them a little more TLC.
Yeah, just takes a little further. Hey, I mean, Ignite's coming up. This show comes out in August. Ignite's the end of September. Last time we talked, I think it was the last day of Ignite.
It was.
In 2015 in Chicago.
It was. We had our cool special room for several hours with a myriad of people staring in at us.
That's right. We stole that room from the restaurant, didn't we? We got our food and then we just settled down and recorded for a while.
And they were great. Manager brought us some food. They brought us appetizers. They stayed out of the way. It was a great experience. But yeah, I think that was the last one that we did. We kind of did a show wrap up, and it was quite a show last year. It was great to see how excited people were about Windows 10 and the fact that, you know, and this was our comment, was how much we as a company have changed and really looking at
sure.
what our customers are looking for. And now with HoloLens, with Surface Hub, with newer hardware, with new licensing branches, with advanced threat protection and new levels of protection for cloud, I think we have so many great things to talk about at Ignite this year and really show how much more focused I believe we as a company have been towards what our customers have been asking for. And are doing it faster and more quickly and giving them what they're asking for, as well as delighting them with things that they didn't realize they needed. And I hope that that's what we hear back from folks.
Well, and all signs point to Server 2016 is just going to steal the show. Like, it is all of those things and more.
Yeah, that and our new CRM release is also very exciting. So I think that there's some good stuff. And then bots. We should do a whole show on bots.
I've done a bunch of shows on 2016 already, and we got to do more.
Yeah.
Love to do more shows around the CRM product, because I, you know, that thing went through so many convulsions, but now it seems like it's really coming into its own.
They are gunning for Salesforce and for all the rest. And now with Cortana integration and bot integration and the intelligent cloud integration, it's amazing. It was funny. I did a conference for the Taser company, the folks who make both the Tasers and the chest cams.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on a panel discussion with two ex-chief of polices and some other folks. It's interesting. We talk about how IT has to change. And they said, you know, what is the one best advice that you would give police departments when it comes to, you know, changing? We talk about how HoloLens is going to change how you look at crime scenes and all this great technology. But it was fail fast. I said, you guys as government agencies do these projects that takes years. And by the time you finally roll them out, they're already out of date.
Sure. It
takes 2-3 years. And I said, I understand the term fail fast for you guys is terrifying, because often when you fail, somebody dies. That is bad. But the one thing that we are really working to teach our customers, and we're hearing from our customers, is try it, do a pilot, try it. If it fails, great, fail fast, learn from it. What did you learn, and move on and continue? The companies that have had these failures, but then have learned from it and move forward, are the ones that we're seeing really gobbling up this convergence of these new technologies and how they come together and giving them different business advantages. And it's probably my one mantra when talking to any CEO or CIO is, you know, let's do this. If we fail, let's learn from it. Let's try three or four different pilots. Let's put some 8-inch tablets here. Let's put a 10-inch here. Let's try this as cloud connected. Let's try self-service. And it's really amazing to see how some of the biggest corporations, ones who are very steady, like Walmart, are now saying, you know what? We want to try some of this stuff.
Sure.
We're seeing our audiences change and what they want.
You know, in my DevOps world these days, we talk about developers that fail fast and ops guys that recover fast. Because
I like that.
Because that's the truth, right?
Yeah.
The experiment, typically new software, has the risk of failure. And what makes it acceptable is the ops guys know where we go next.
Yeah.
Whether we go forward or have to step back, either way, we know both routes are available. We recover fast.
I agree.
Yeah. And it's a thing of, I mean, we all get that because we know how software works. It fail fast is good, right? Figure out the test. Nope. And you know where else to go.
Right.
But it's not like fail fast. Okay. We failed. That was quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's somebody picking up the pieces and it's usually the ops guy for better or worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, my friend, always super fun to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I know I had a bit of a jury rig, but it seemed to work.
Well, we'll find out when it goes up on the air in a few days.
I guess we will, coming out in a few weeks. Stephen Rose, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.